This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to Twin Peaks Investing, the podcast brought to you by at Conkers 3. My name is Peter Higgins and Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. The two of us, we do this unscripted chat catch up regarding the investing market, stocks and shares across the UK indices, and we're absolutely thrilled. This week, this is Twin Peaks Investing 37, and this is our second anniversary of doing these podcasts, and we thank you ever so much for sticking with us. And for those that were there right at the beginning, they remember there being like a whistling sound where Pete and I were talking, and if they were lucky, they'd hear Pete coming through one ear and me coming through another ear or a different speaker. So
totally scratchy and like, it was so bad. I mean, it was really funny because someone said on Twitter the other day they were going to go back and listen to the early ones, and I'm thinking, no, don't do it. Don't do it. It'll put you off. You know what I mean? I mean, it's funny because you oh, hello, everyone, by the way. This is TPI 37, and you know, we've been doing it quite a long time now. And I sort of feel, and I think Peter feels the same about it, really. It's really in the last, say, six, seven, eight podcasts we feel like they're flowing better for us personally. I mean, it's hard for us to tell, but hopefully the listeners are sort of noticing that as well and feeling the benefit.
Absolutely. I mean, we've had, once again, ladies and gents, we've had some phenomenal feedback from you guys that are listening. I mean, and we love the fact you've embraced our unscripted, a little bit off
our the cluelessness.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you know, we're a bit different to the norm. But we hope that our sort of informal, relaxed, quite radical approach to sharing our little snippets of knowledge and what insights we see in the market are enabling you all to go ahead, do your research, pick selective stocks and do well. We had someone commenting to us last week about TPX, which is Penelope. Penelope company, and they've done phenomenally well in that. You know, I think they've made something like 60-70% in the space of a couple of months of holding that stock when we last mentioned it. So we're really, really pleased about that. And then also we had somebody commenting about they bought into ULS, which had a really good pop in the last couple of weeks as well, which we mentioned, I think, with the last podcast actually. And that's gone up from, you know, 30-40% in the past 2 or 3 weeks. So we're really pleased. I mean, the whole idea behind this is to share ideas for you guys to go away, do your research. Never take anything what Pete and I say regarding a stock being good, bad or indifferent as read. Go away, do your own research. When you purchase that, you're purchasing that because of your own research, not because Pete mentioned it or I mentioned it. That's how you do it. You do your own research and make your own decisions. And when it goes well, it's down to you. It's not down to Pete or me.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, I mean, me and Pete, really, we just talk about what we're doing in real life because we're both full-time investors. We've both been in the game for decades. And you know, we've got a rough idea of what's going on. Well, I've got a rough idea. Pete's got a much better idea. But, you know, it's like we've seen a lot of things going on. We've experienced a lot. We tend to know what tends to work and what tends to not work. We know things about how to manage portfolios for the best and what, again, you know, is probably a way of running a portfolio that won't work. And we're just telling you what we're doing every day because this is what we do. We live, sleep, eat, breathe it. You know, it's like if you listen to an F1, Formula One podcast or something, you know, you'd want a podcast with Lewis Hamilton talking to David Coulthard or something. So you get two people who've actually done it or are actually doing it, and it's actually real. And it's like, I think so many things you hear or you read, you can tell from what you're reading, what you're hearing, that the people don't actually really do it. That they're just writing about it, and that's just like meaningless.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the thing. We've got a passion for this stuff. We enjoy doing it. And, you know, unfortunately for you, ladies and gents that are listening, we actually enjoy talking about it, you know, which is why some of these podcasts, you know, we're thinking, oh, crikey, we've been talking for like 70 minutes here now, but best we go now. We've been talking too long, because we could end up doing a marathon 2 hours and 3 hours, and people are saying, you know what, please, can you make them longer? And we're thinking, you know what, when we started, people were saying, oh, half an hour is too long. Now we're doing 60 minutes and it feels about right, doesn't it, Pete?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's funny, I was going to just mention that I've had a bit of an innovation at my end, because we don't live together. People may not realise this. I'm sure a lot of people think we live together. And we're like, yeah.
That would never happen, Pete. That would never happen, mate. No, sorry.
Oh, no chance.
Not a chance in the world.
But it's like, Pete lives in like somewhere near Leicester or something, and I live in Windsor. And I'm a wheelchair user, so normally I sit in my wheelchair, and we're doing the recordings while I'm sat in my wheelchair. And invariably when that's happening, I'll have some sort of physical thing that will go wrong with me while I'm sat in my wheelchair doing this podcast. And it sort of stresses me out, and I'm sort of halfway through the podcast, and it's like I'm feeling rubbish, you know what I mean? And I think it detracts from what I'm saying in the podcast. So what I've done this time is I've actually got myself on my sofa and I'm more planted, and hopefully I'll be more relaxed. And if anything does happen, I can deal with it without it affecting the podcast. So anyway, just be warned, I'm more relaxed. That could be dangerous.
Yeah, yes, it could. Talking about relaxed, Pete, we need to talk about the markets a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of people, thankfully, a lot of our listeners and people we know on Twitter and across social media had a phenomenal November, you know. We're now, it's being recorded at 6:01 at the minute, people, and it's the second of December, and some people, individuals on Twitter and across the social media had a phenomenal November. November was globally was phenomenal for investors. So stocks in November, Dow Jones best month since 1987, Russell 2000 best month ever, beating February 2000. EU stock markets even better. Greece, of all places, Pete, was the best performer, right, across the EU, up 29%. Yeah, their index. I can't even tell you what that index is called. I've lost track of it. But
AEX, or did they make that up?
AEX could be right, Pete. You could be right, actually.
I don't know.
Yeah. And the FTSE had its best month since 1987. So absolutely awesome. I'm gonna do what I did last time, because that seemed to go down quite well. And this is going to run up to the last trading day of November, folks. So listen to these figures for some stocks here, right? I'm not going to give you the ticker symbols. You'll have to find these ticker symbols yourself. Cineworld up for the month 99.72%. SSP Group 76.75%. Capita 71%. TUI up 65%. Trainline 65%. Micro Focus 63%, Rank 60%, IAG 59%, EasyJet 59%, RSA Insurance 59%, Carnival 56%, Vistry 51%, Rolls Royce 48%. Yeah, and that's just a FTSE 350. Let's go into AIM.
Yeah, they are AIM, stunning
returns. And this goes back to us always saying, do your research, and hopefully You're then in a stock which gets that momentum or gets that push or has that really good month or 2 months or 3 months, right? AIM stocks, Anglesey Mining, 97%. British American IT, 75%. The Works, 60%. Sportec, 59%. Caffins, 57%. Triad Group, 55%. McCall's Retail Group, 50%. Countrywide, 46%. NMCN, 40%. JKX Oil and Gas, 38%. Chelverton, 35%. Town Centre Securities, 34%. Yeah, and Pete, small caps. Remember, we used to give so much grief. I mean, probably more, not we, me, regarding Metro Group being an absolute dog of a stock to avoid.
MTRO with a dog bowl.
Yeah, it hits low earlier this year. In the space of November, for a variety of different reasons, right, 99% up Metro.
Wow. Yeah?
But bizarrely, all the people that were ramping Metro weren't talking about it, because none of them hold it anymore, because it's gone from 2.5 quid down to 60 pence or whatever it bottomed at. Yeah. So right. It's up 100% over the month. Premier Oil up 80%. Your favourite, Pete, well, one of your favourites, sorry, On the Beach up 80%.
OTB, yeah, I thought that had done well. So I've got
Saga that got written off was up 79%. John Menzies, 77%. Costain, 73%. Hive Group, 72%. Elementis, 61%. Hostel World, 60%. Stagecoach, 59%. Restaurant Group, 58%. Renewy, 58%. So if you were fortunate enough to be holding one of them or two of them or three of them in your portfolio, you had a fantastic, fantastic November. And as Pete and I said in the last podcast, there was a rotation, and that's continued. You know, some of the stocks that were doing exceptionally well have not done so well in November or the close of November, you know, since we last spoke. And they've been exceeded by what were some of the dog stocks that were got written off or sold out with the bathwater back in March, April, have come on and done exceptionally well in November. And it started as well. We've had, three trading days in December so far. And some of those stocks have continued to move.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I think, it's very difficult to pick those stocks just before they do these big moves. I mean, no doubt there would have been loads of geniuses on Twitter who did do it, yeah? But it's practically very difficult to do that. And especially if you're a sort of long-term investor. Well, yeah, for myself, I'm a long-term investor. I'll quite happily hold stocks for years and years and years and years and years. But it's like I'm not chopping in and out all the time. But the thing is, I don't have the time or the inclination to be staring at my screen all day long and jumping on the latest move. But because of the way I do things, in that I've basically got my portfolio of stocks and it's fairly diverse and mixed up with all sorts of weird stuff in it. The beauty for me was that when that rally happened, I'd kept a lot of my junk that had got beaten up. Yeah, I say junk. My cyclicals and the things that suffered, yeah. Retailers and travel companies and all that sort of stuff. Those things that have got beat up, miners, things that got beat up previously, I still had them. So once this boom came, I was able to capitalize on that boom because I was in it already. And I think that really helped me. And luckily, the stocks that I held that had done well before, like TM17 and MPAC and TSTL, Tristel, those ones that had done well generally stayed up for me pretty well. They didn't push on like the cyclicals did, but they didn't really lose much. So overall, the sort of combination of that really helped me massively in November. And I'm so happy about where my portfolio is now, especially when I think that back in March, April, it was down like 40% or something ridiculous. I mean, if you'd have asked me back in March, do you ever think you'll get back into profit this year? I'd have said, no chance. I mean, it's amazing, the recovery.
The recovery has taken a lot of people by surprise. And unfortunately, Pete, even during November, I think there were some significant individuals who I spoke with who were still sitting heavily in cash. They're very concerned about the markets. And they've got a right to be, Pete, because a lot of the noise that we're hearing and a lot of the issues we're seeing are of companies going under. We're hearing about Arcadia Group, we're hearing about Debenhams, we're hearing about Peacocks. The retail sector is an absolute bloodbath in a sense of, tens of thousands of jobs are going every single week. You know, we don't know whether they're going to get, the pensions are going to be getting sorted out or whatever. So it's not a safe place to be. And we've got to marry that with the fact that, 2021, it could be sorted. We've got that bonus about, the COVID vaccines coming, and we're going to get this, and we're going to have vaccinations and so on and so forth. And that positive news has kept the markets alive and well. But we're still facing higher employment going into 2021. And we're facing, another lockdown and so on and so forth. So we've got to be mindful of that. We're not through the woods yet. And, you were touching on about stocks that you held and you kept it holding. That's another conversation, Pete. The conversation you're having is about having done the research, you've got the conviction to hold on to your quality stocks. Yeah? If you've got the conviction to have done the research and you're happy with the stock at £1, yeah, and the market implodes and it's down at 50 pence, you're not saying, oh my gosh, I'm losing 50% on this stock, therefore I'm going to have to bail. You're saying, no, you know what? I still like this stock at 50 pence. And when the markets recover, not if, when the markets recover, my quality stock will be okay.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, the advantage I got is a sense that my diversification helped me a lot. You know, because I have ones that did well, they made up for a lot of the drops on the ones that did really terribly badly. But of course, the other thing that helped me was my hedging strategy, which meant that I was making money on index shorts back in March when the markets were getting spanked. And that really, it doesn't, I'm of the sense that it doesn't help massively with your returns, but what it does do is it makes you far more relaxed and able to cope with the problem. You know, you can sort of deal with it better because you know you're making money on something, even if you're losing on something else. And that, I think, psychologically really helped me. I mean, in this sort of panic sell-off back in March, I was definitely more relaxed than I've ever been in that situation, which is unusual because, in you know, it was the fastest fall ever. I should have been absolutely terrified, but I wasn't because I knew I was making massive money on my shorts.
You were protecting the downside, Pete. But the other thing you've not touched on there is the fact you've got 20 odd years experience, right, of the markets being volatile on different occasions.
Yeah, that helps.
And the problem we've got with a lot of investors and also traders is that they don't have 20 years experience. They've got 1 year, 2 years, 5 years experience. And that, for certain people, depending on their psyche and their psychology that they've got, isn't enough. And that's why they don't take the time to refine their strategies, to improve on that strategy and stick with that strategy. And that's why they keep moving from goalpost to goalpost to goalpost with a new idea and a new idea and a new strategy without refining the first one properly.
Yeah, that's so true. And it's that thing that I've talked about before about, you know, establishing an approach that will work for you. And then once you've got to that stage, which takes years, it's not something you can do overnight. Once you've got an approach that works, you've then got to move to that next stage of optimizing it and making it work to its maximum possible that it can. You know, obviously, with realistic bias, because you're realistic tint to it, because you're always going to get things wrong. You know, that's just the nature of the game. And that's the other thing. It's like you have to accept that things will go wrong. And that's perfectly normal and part of the system and the process and optimizing. That's all part of the same thing.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll give a great example, Pete. We were talking a little while back about one of the companies that I held that was doing barnstorming and going really, really, really well.
Mm.
And that company was LoopUp. Do you recall us talking about LoopUp?
Yeah, yeah. Loop.
So it was all about working from home, and it was doing phenomenally well. I'd bought it this time last year, actually, last December.
Yeah.
And it was doing awesome, Pete. Just absolutely flying off the, you know, flying up there.
You timed that brilliant because you'd sort of, you know, we were going into the whole COVID nightmare, and you'd spotted that things like Zoom and that people were starting to use it, and you're like, well, what have we got in this country that does similar? And you saw Loop, and you're like, right, that's the one I'm going. Well, you did research, but you went, that's the one I'm going for, and away you went. Brilliant.
Yeah, but however, Pete, what happened with that was it got picked up by other people, the Zoom element of it, people working from home. It became almost an indirect COVID play on the tech side of things. Yeah?
Yeah.
So the share price just carried on going up and up and up. Simon Thompson and a few others started talking about it. And by the time I was starting to trim Loop around from buying at 50 pence and trimming it at 140, Simon Thompson started talking about it as a buy, right?
Yeah.
So that then carried on up to £2, and then he got tipped again, and it went up to £2.48, Pete. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, last week, it came out with news that, you know, everyone was expecting a trading update to be okay. It wasn't okay. Yeah. It was, in fact, one of those where it was a case of the market was expecting far more from the company. Yeah. And it had already started to drift from £2 to 180 to 160, and then it was at 155.
Yeah.
And last week, on the 27th, trading update wasn't great. Let's be honest with it. It wasn't great.
Before we go into that, can I just ask you a quick question? I'm really worried I'm going to miss it, and it's a really important question, right? You said you bought it at, what did you say you bought it at, say, one?
Just over 50 pence, Pete.
Just over 50p, and then you said at around 152 quid.
140, I trimmed, took some off the table, yeah.
Right, my question is, what made you trigger that sale? What about it made you think, right, I'm now going to trim it a bit? Because that was really good move, and I want to understand the psychology and the mechanism. Is it as simple as once it's up three times I sell it? Is that how it works?
No, Pete. For me, as you know, I look at fundamentals of a company. I look at the technicals a bit like you as well. I look at what's going on with their peers as well, right? So I've got the thing in front of me now. It's June the 25th, right? So I've held the stock since, get my dates right. October the 4th was when I bought it, right, Pete?
Yeah.
Just over 50 pence, right? So we're now, 8 months on from October. We're now in June. And for me, the shares were up 179% from my purchase, right?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, wow, that's a lot in the space of 6 to 8 months, right? I'm looking at the resistance levels, right? The resistance levels for that particular move was 146, looking at the chart on a wider sort of scope beyond 2 or 3 years. 146. That particular day, it hit intraday high of 145, and then fell back. It couldn't get through that resistance at 146. So when it carried on ebbing down from 145 to 140, I decided to take some off the table.
So you thought it was pausing at that level, pausing, or maybe it was going to struggle? Yeah.
It doesn't mean that it wasn't going to go past 146, but I thought, what? It's had a really good run, and today it's got to that resistance level and it's rolled back. I'm gonna take some of the top. So I took a chunk off there, and I thought, let me just see what happens with the rest of the year, with regard to the stock. And lo and behold, then Simon Thompson starts talking about it. Every man and his dog listens to Simon Thompson, And I thought, right, okay, let's see what happens next. And the mistake I made, if anything, was not taking some more off the table as Simon Thompson was starting to talk about it.
Yeah? Okay, that's interesting because Simon does get a lot right.
He gets a load right. I trimmed it at 140 in the June, right? And on the 2nd of July, he started talking about it as a stock.
Yeah. Because it's a sort of push-pull, isn't it? It's like, on the one hand, you're thinking, oh, Christ, I'm up loads here. I'm doing really well. I think I need to take a bit off the table. Then on the other hand, you've got, Simon Thompson's just started covering. And actually, Simon Thompson's pretty good. So it's that sort of push-pull, getting that balance right, isn't it? It's not easy.
I mean, he called the stock right. It was in one of the hottest sectors of the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. But unfortunately with these things, Pete, as invariably happens, when a stock goes up, which, it was at 40 pence earlier in the year, Pete, it then gets everybody wants to be in a stock that's going up, Peter, right?
Of course it is,
and the people that haven't got it won't talk about it, right? But when the stock then goes up to 248 and starts to roll back, people start talking about it, going, see, I told you, right? And then last week, when the stock's at 155 and people are expecting a good trading update, or no trading update at all, you then get a trading update, and the trading update isn't as hot as it should be, right? And they're moving to a subscription base. And you know what it's like when you're used to getting ad hoc sort of payments. When you're moving to a subscription base, it takes a long time to get that momentum into your revenue. Yeah? So people are expecting that to be accelerating quicker, and it didn't. So Bosch, the market makers opened it at, I think it was £1. I think it opened at £1 from £1.55. They opened it at £1.
It got really spanked, didn't it?
It got spanked. So what do you do? If you're holding a stock, and you're inexperienced or experienced, and you're holding it 1 minute from, you've bought it at £2.20, it's now at 155, trading update comes, it looks okay to you because you've quickly scanned it, and the market makers open it at £1, you're going, oh, taking a deep intake of breath, and you're panicking, and you're selling and selling and selling. Before you knew it, Loop was at 80 pence.
I mean, it got absolutely killed. I found it quite fascinating because it downgraded its EBITDA. I think, what did they call it? Adjusted EBITDA. I mean, that sounds blinking messy, doesn't it? Adjusted EBITDA, they downgraded it. But EBITDA often approximates for cash profit, very roughly, very approximate, yeah? If you know the company well, you get more sense of how good that approximation is. I just took that approximation. I worked out a quick multiple on it. I thought, bloody hell, this looks cheap. It was like five times. It was priced at like five times that multiple. I thought, five times that adjusted EBITDA. I thought, blimey, that looks so beat up. Then I looked and saw that the cash had increased. So I thought, well, that's quite a good sign. But then later in the day, I wasn't that interested in it because I'm not like a massive fan of loot, but I was sort of intrigued, you know. And I was looking in the balance sheet, and the thing that hit me about it was when you look at the intangible assets, you've got your goodwill there. There was like quite a bit of goodwill. And that is, you know, when they've done an acquisition, they're paying more for the acquisition than the assets are sort of worth in their sort of fixed asset value or whatever. But then it had, there was something else on there. Yeah, capitalized R&D spend, which, you know, that's sort of okay, but sort of not. It depends on the company. But the thing that I still don't understand now is there's this thing called other intangibles. And it's massive. It's like the biggest number there. And to me, it just looks an incredibly weak balance sheet. So if there is a problem going forward, if their trading does get worse, there is nothing to back that up. So that's the thing that would put me off more than anything, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with, and I say this to people quite a lot, Pete, the difficulty with looking at tech companies are the intangibles. It's difficult to measure their intangibles, right? But if you want to look at fundamentals, with Loop, it's got a potential contract value of 84 million p up from 68.
Which is a lot, isn't it? Yeah. Right.
So it's a lot. And you know what? In a scale of where the space that they're in and the growth rates going forward, once they get the subscription base sorted out and the growth continues, they'll be fine. But you know what? People have been shocked by that move. You know, they're shocked by it going from 40 pence to 248, and they've been shocked from it rolling over, going back down to 80 pence. I think it finished sub that today at 77 pence. So for people buying it at £2.20, you know, some people still got it from that price, £2.30, still got it from that price. People are buying at £2.30, £2.20, £2. So to have that at 80 pence now, they're sitting on a stock that's blaring and glaring red in their portfolio. And how long will it take to get back to £2? It could be a good while. So you've either got to decide to take the loss and move on, or you've got to hold on. Yeah,
what's
I've already trimmed
now,
the profit. So I've added some more last week at 80 pence. So I'll hold on for a little while longer and see what happens in January and February of next year, because I know in my heart of hearts, given my research on it, that working from home isn't going to go away. People are going to go back to the offices when the vaccine is all sorted out and everyone's tested and all the rest of it. People will go back, but working from home will still be in place and still be growing going forward. That's my view of it. So I'll be patient with it and just see what happens. And until some significant next bad news comes and I go, I'll take a choice and make my call on it. If it means I'll change my mind, I'll change my mind and sell. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's what people have to do. They've got to make their own minds up, regardless of who owns it. Yeah. Who they see on Twitter or what Simon Thompson or anybody else says, you've got to make your own mind up about a stock. You've got to have that conviction. There's momentum, there's valuation, and then there's actually the reality of what the stock is doing, what the company's doing. And I said this to the last podcast, the only people that know exactly what's going on in the company are the CEO and the CFO, usually.
Well, and a lot of them don't have much idea. I'm just looking at the chart for Loop. Yeah. And what's fascinating on that is that it had the big drop. When was that, like a week ago or something?
Yeah.
And then in the last 4 days, it's basically gone sideways. So we had the big drop. The next day, it put in a small candlestick. Now, that pattern of a big drop and a small candlestick is a bullish harami, right? So in theory, is the one, they call it the pregnant woman viewed from the side. Anyway,
moving
the theory on. With that, as you know, candlestick theory, is that it should then start to rally off that. Now, it's interesting, it hasn't rallied, it's just gone sideways.
Yeah, Pete, the reason why it's done that is because Zoom came out with their data this week as well, and their revenues went up 367%, Pete, right? So smashed every single expectation that was out there for Zoom. Guess what happened to that share price over 2 days? Went down 15%.
Wow.
Yeah, but you've got to remember, these stocks have gone up 100, 200, 300, 400, 500%.
There's so much hope in them,
isn't there? They've gone up so far, so fast.
Yeah.
At some point or other, someone's going to have to take something off the table.
Exactly. So the interesting thing with that...
One thing I'm going to add here is that with regards to any stock, whether you're buying something that's in the US stock exchange, right, or the UK stock exchange, have a look where the share price started from. If the share price started at 12 pence or 10 pence and it's now at £2.20, have a think about it. Everyone's talking about this stock. Why am I buying this stock now at £2 if it was only 10 pence 3 months ago, 6 months ago, or 6 months ago? Have a think about it, because you might be a bit late, but put in your diary, what are the reasons why I'm happy to pay 20 times more than somebody was spending 6 months ago buying this stock? And if that doesn't stop you buying it, good luck. But I prefer to buy it before everyone else is buying it. And I'll be wrong 50% of the time. But the 50% of the time that I'm right and I get threefold, fivefold, sixfold, tenfold on that stock over a period of time, it will make up for the time that I'm wrong, or the 50% of the time that I'm wrong. But I'm happy to take that risk with my own research, not someone else, and then buying it 20 times more than they bought it at.
But looking at Loop now, I think if I was interested in buying it, say I didn't have it and I was interested in buying it and I thought there might be potential, but obviously there's risks around it. I think what I'd probably do is buy it in small size just so my risk is controlled. Because the thing is, if they then come out with good news, or if the chart starts to move up nicely and it's like, yeah, this is actually looking like it's all right, then you can buy more. But it's like, I think the big mistake people make is they'll be like buying massive amounts of it now. Well, you could be asking for trouble. I mean, it may work out. You may get lucky and it may do really well and you've made a fortune on 50% of your portfolio. If it goes wrong, you've been spanked on 50%.
Yeah, this goes back to your philosophy on diversification, Pete, and having it so no one stock can really dent your performance. But what you've got to remember as well is that, unfortunately, when a stock moves significantly to the downside, you always get the traders in the stock, Pete. And they're looking for that 5%, 10%, 15% bounce. And they're all buying it like flies around. And then they on the stock. And then intraday, they'll be buying it and selling it, buying it and selling it 15, 20 times during the trading day. And the next day and the next day. So the stock never, ever gets left alone to actually deal with what's going on and actually move on to where it should stay or where it should be. And the only time that then happens is when they come out with the next set of news. You know, the traders will be in it from last week till this Friday, right? And then after that, they'll leave the stock alone, I think. And then it will be a case of what is actually Loop doing it on its own merit?
Just interesting, because I've had a similar situation with Boohoo.
There's loads on that one.
Yeah, we discussed it on the podcast and stuff. And do you know what? Exactly what you're saying has played out there. Because what's happened is it got absolutely spanked in the first place. And then it, you know, tried to recover a bit. But the thing is, it can't recover because traders start selling it. So I'm looking at a three-month chart, right? So in the last sort of just under 2 months, it's sort of gone up, then it's dropped back again as obviously the traders started selling it. Then it's gone up a bit, then it's dropped back again. Then it's gone up a bit, dropped back again. And finally now, I mean, it's hard for me to see it, but it's moved from sort of like, I don't know, say it was down at, about 220 or something. It's finally now recovered up to 314. So it's slowly crawling its way back. And the nice thing is it's just closed a gap. There was a gap on the chart and it's closed that gap up, which is quite a good sign. But I think in line with what you were saying, unless and until they come out with a really strong trading update or something really amazing, I think it's just going to grind probably slowly upwards, you know. But I think it's definitely going to need patience to see it get back where it was.
It's going to need patience, Pete. I mean, there's still a lot of noise around it regarding all the stuff that's been going on around its factories and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
I think the next impetus that could happen with Boohoo will be update and market news from ASOS. And if ASOS does well, invariably that's a really, really, well, it has been a really good indicator for what Boohoo have been doing, because invariably Boohoo has been percentage-wise outperforming ASOS. So, you know, that's usually a good move for them. And people tend to buy ahead of that sort of news from ASOS as well. So, you know, and then they'll get a push that way. But it depends on what happens regarding the actual macro stuff around all these investigations regarding Boohoo, which they don't seem to be able to get away from. We've been speaking about it since the summer.
And they've just appointed a real big hitter to run their ESG sort of independent board sort of thing.
Levinson? Is it Levinson?
Yeah, the Levinson, who did that Levinson inquiry, which was the inquiry into preference. He's a real big hitter. They've done well to get him.
You can't get bigger than that, Pete. It's like, how much are they paying that person to take that role for 24 hours
a week? Don't even go there.
24 hours a month. That's staggering, mate.
You've got to sell a lot of £4 t-shirts. But do you know what? Another thing that's interesting with this whole fashion thing, whereas a couple of things before I forget it, you were talking about trading updates and that. Am I right in thinking that it tends to be in early January you get the Christmas trading updates from the clothing retail, well, from all the retailers? Well,
most of the retailers, Pete, they want to talk about how well they've done over Christmas or not, you know?
Yeah. So I think, you know, so the chances are the strong companies in retail might do all right through December. You know, the ones like Next, the ones like Boohoo, the ones like Pets, but, you know, whatever.
Pete, caveat that with the strong companies that have got a strong online presence.
That as well. I'm talking about what I'm talking about here is omni-channels.
Yes. So,
apart from Boo, obviously, which is like only online. Yeah. But you look at Pets, you look at Next, and I'll tell you what, it's funny you should bring that up because there's a company I wanted to talk about. Angling Direct, ANG.
Fishing
one. They had an update today. And do you know what? It really struck me that Angling Direct is doing a similar thing to Pets at Home. They've really got their heads around omni-channel. So this is this idea that you have a really strong online presence, but you sort of ally that and combine that with the bricks. You know, so it's bricks and clicks. And you use things like, so the customer, it's sort of seamless to the customer. They can order it online and they can pick it up from the shop. They can see it in the shop. They can order it online in the shop. You know, it's everything sort of integrated and works together. And I think Angling Direct, and that was the other thing. Retail is obviously struggling. You know, bricks retail is obviously in a lot of trouble. The thing that makes Pets and the thing that makes Angling Direct, they are destination stores. They are stores that people will go to irrespective of whatever shops are around it. You don't go to a shopping centre. You know, if you go to a shopping centre, you want to see loads and loads of different shops, don't you? And have a shopping experience, have a day out around the shops, coffee shops, everything.
Yeah.
You go to Pets, you just go to Pets. You go to Angling Direct, you just go to Angling Direct. They are destination stores. You're fascinated in fishing, you go to Angling Direct. And I think that's a real diversifier and a real significant like competitive advantage.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the beauty of having a niche which you've got fewer competitors out there doing it, Pete. You know, and they've been one of those sort of, what I love about companies like that is that you don't see people talking about it on social media, Pete.
Never.
Quietly going about its business and then it releases an update and bang. The share price is up 5-10%, and everyone's going, "What stock's that?" It's like, "Oh, no one's talking about it." And that's that. I prefer to have those kind of stocks. I've not a stock I've looked at, Pete, but it's definitely I appreciate companies that just go about their business quietly and let success be the noise about what they're doing, you know, and not constantly in the news or people ramping it left, right, and centre in the hope that they can push the stock up. You know,
interesting difference with those stocks, though, that I must make clear. I hold Pets. I don't hold ANG or whatever it's called. One of the big differences is that with Pets, you've got a really steady, fairly strong growth market. You know, there's more and more people getting animals. You know, Pets are just generally, they call it the humanization of pets. So I guess it's always things like people getting their dog and putting Batman outfits on it and nonsense like that. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's a, you know, they dress their, you know, I love kangaroos, so they dress their cat to look like a kangaroo, all this daft stuff. But it's like you know, a dog or a cat, it's become like an important member of the family.
Absolutely.
It's the humanization of pets, and that's such a strong thing. Now, the difference with Angling Direct is that before the COVID-19 crisis, fishing's been very much in decline as a hobby because obviously the kids are all playing on flipping video games and God knows what else. But because it was one of the first things you were allowed to do out of lockdown, lots of people went fishing who wouldn't have before. And apparently it has continued to some extent. But I think overall you're still talking a declining market. But the difference is Anglian Direct is capturing more of a declining market.
That you need to be in a strong niche, Pete. I say that every single time. And if they're in a situation where they're having a new audience going out buying the kit or changing their kit or upgrading their kit, then great for them. I've just looked at the share price, Pete, and it's sitting at a 52-week high today on those results.
Yeah, they were good results. I thought, you know, I was quite impressed.
Yeah, they've done well, mate. They've done well for people. You know, having been as low as 28.5p when everything got smashed at the end of the mid to end of March, beginning of April, it's finished at 70p today. Sorry, just below its just below its 52-week high, Pete. So yeah, so that's a good call, Pete. But you've touched on it there in the sense of the niche that they're in. And that's another part of the research, Pete, is finding stocks or companies that are in niches that remain strong despite COVID or benefit from COVID or benefit from an audience returning to that particular sector. That's a good thing to be looking for.
That's the other thing with COVID. It's like you want something that's enduring because, of course, one of the dangers with a lot of the COVID things is there is a potential it could be flash in the pan. So you need... I mean, like I said, you know, the great thing about the pets market is that this is a trend that's been going on for probably 10, 15 years, that people are getting more and more animals. And it's just, well, our own human population is growing. So, you know, it's like as the human population growing, people live on their own more. You're going to sell more dogs. It's just a fact. You know, it sort of goes hand in hand, really. But if you're in a market that's growing, it just makes the job so much easier.
Absolutely agree with you, mate. Absolutely.
Mate, I wanted to talk about the overall markets and what, you know, what might happen. But, I mean, we can never know. But what I'm sort of thinking is that December is traditionally, normally, the strongest month, yeah? Now, we've had a pretty strong November, putting it mildly. But I still think December will be all right. You know, I think it's got the potential to be an okay month. So, I'm 100% invested pretty much. And I'm very happy to be, you know, fully long in this market. And we were talking earlier about Santa Rally. I think Santa Rally is such a strong phenomenon. It happens so often that there's a fairly good chance we're going to get a Santa Rally. And that's normally something like 14th of December it tends to start. And it's just a sort of general drift up in share prices that runs up to Christmas Day, through the gap between Christmas Day and New Year. And then you get a couple of days into January. Then you tend to get a bit of a sell-off. But I would imagine that will probably happen. I mean, we can't know, but I personally will be trying to play that. So I'll be doing like a FTSE 100 long, probably around the 12th, 13th, 14th. I'll be looking at the charts to try and see if they are consistent with that. And I'll be doing I won't go mad. I'll do a fairly small long on the FTSE 100 to juice up my returns a bit.
I think the Americans have another term as well, Pete, and they talk about the... Have you ever heard the term the January effect?
Oh, right. What's that then? Yeah. What do they say there? I've heard
that's
of it.
Essentially talking about the markets moving from mid-December. They also call it the Santa Rally, but there's another aspect of it which runs from almost the beginning of November or the mid-December through to January. And that's about when the small caps, people rotate out the large caps for tax purposes into the smaller cap companies. And the smaller caps get a really good run for like six weeks from the middle end of November through to the middle end of December and also into January. So we might end up with that sort of thing happening again. But you've got to remember that lots of things are aligning, Pete, in the sense of the COVID vaccines. What news we had today about they're going to start potential vaccinations very, very, very soon. And, you know, clearance regarding that in the EU for the Pfizer drug. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all of that's aligning in the sense of we're getting that sort of positive news regarding the markets. Had a fantastic November. Like you say, could we carry on, get the Santa Rally? And then we've got to brace ourselves as to what happens then in January, February, March of next year. But I think we could have it, Pete. But, you know, what did we get in November for the FTSE? Was it 13 to 15% or something like that?
Whatever it was, yeah.
A phenomenal move, Pete.
Yeah.
You know, from where we were, where you called it from 577 going down to 55. We then ran up to 6,400 and odd. And we're back there again today. So we've had a good run already, and I'm hoping it continues for the sake of, you know, the people that are fully invested. But you've got to bear in mind to prepare yourself if that's not the case, you know?
Joe, I was thinking about it, right? I was looking at it. Well, I'm always looking at it, but I hold things like Shell, RDSB. I hold HSBC, you know, HSBA. I hold Standard Chartered, STAN. I hold BAE Systems, BA Dot. Now, the interesting thing with all of those is that they've all recovered a bit. And yes, they've had an incredible bounce through November. But when you actually look at them, they are still massively down. So I think, and I was looking at STAN today and HSBA particularly, they look to me like there is still potential for a fair bit of upside on those. If I'm right, and if they do go up, that will take the FTSE 100 up with it. Because things like AstraZeneca, okay, it might ease off a little bit if the move is all towards the cyclicals, but I don't think they're going to move off much. So with AstraZeneca having so much weight in the FTSE 100, if it doesn't do much, but if the other ones all come back up, then that could push the FTSE 100 up.
It could. I mean, obviously, for you and I, Pete, and a few others that hold AstraZeneca, the COVID noise has been a bit of a distraction for AstraZeneca. And the traders getting into the stock, you know, back in October, September, has not helped the company's cause at all. So it's not performed as well as we would hope, but it's still been hanging around between the low, sorry, I say low, even sub 80 to where it normally would be hanging around in the sense of the mid 90s. So we're sitting there now at the minute, and I think, you know, if they get into the situation where they come out with some more, a bit more positive news with their next update regarding the COVID vaccine, even though that's not the mainstay of the company, I think we could see that move much higher than high 70s, low 80s into even the 90s in the next 2 or 3 months. Depends on what news they come out with. And that would help with the markets, you say, with carrying with BP and Royal Dutch Shell and others. If you have those three or four companies doing well, the FTSE will be heading towards and above 6,500 and nearer to 6,800, if not 7,000, within the, by mid-January. But that all depends on what news they come out with next and what happens. Pete, the fly in the ointment will be this Brexit stuff, and I don't want to spend any time talking about it.
Oh, God, yeah, you're right.
What they say or do about that in the next couple of weeks, you know, we've got December 31st. They've got to make a decision as to what they're doing before the 31st, and that decision could have a consequence to what momentum is stays. Well, what momentum stays in the, in this market? They could pop that air out of that balloon, and the market just goes, and before we know it, we're heading back down again, you know? So they've got to be very, very mindful.
Yeah, I was watching a lot of stuff about this yesterday, and one of the things that I picked up was that basically they got about a week to get it done in.
Mm.
But someone said something, I thought, actually, that's a really good point. They said, ignore the noise, right? Ignore what Barnier's saying, ignore what Boris is saying, ignore what Macron's saying. He said, the thing that counts is that they're still in talks. As long as those talks are going on, they are what they call in the tunnel. It's just like this thing that the EU always do to go into the tunnel for the final stage. Mm-hmm. And apparently they've written like 800 pages of legal text on, you know, it's like.
Yeah.
But apparently they're basically in that tunnel. And they reckon that a lot of the noises and all the rest of it, it's just noise. And what matters is as long as those talks are going on, we don't need to worry. We worry the day those talks break up, we got a problem. That I think that's the simple way to sort of view it, really. Mate, I want one AstraZeneca. And before I say AstraZeneca, on the FTSE 100, the really important level is 6512. I keep going on about it. But if it breaks out cleanly above 6512, by which I mean it closes above 6512 with a nice, you know, positive-looking candlestick or whatever, that is really bullish, and the chances are we can move up to 6.7 fairly quickly if that happens. So that's something to really look out for. On AstraZeneca, I was looking at a chart as we were talking, and again, I'm only looking at it on my phone, so I'm having to like take my glasses off and try and see the damn thing, being so young. but the thing that stands out to me is sort of just below 8,000, which is probably about 7.8, up to about, say, 8.88, something like that. There's a sideways range developing, and if you look, it's sort of just come up off the bottom of that range. I think it's going to be in that sideways range for some time, you know.
Yeah, that's a zone that it's been in now since what is it, May?
Quite a while, yeah.
That 80 to 90 range has been in, and it's only when the people started, you know, all the futures people and traders were trading it up to £103, that it went berserk very briefly during that day, and then came down. But 80 to 90 is its range, Pete. You know, above 85, I'd be happy with that as a year end, and then that would give a year to date something like 6% for the year, which is fine for a FTSE 100 company.
And you got a dividend.
And you've got a dividend, yeah.
Mate, on that whole FTSE 100 thing, I just want to get a quick scenario, right? This is what I think is going to happen, and I'm only basing this on what tends to happen every year, right? So what I'm saying is, I think in December the markets will rise, and I think part of the reason they will rise is because people will still be optimistic about the vaccine and all that sort of stuff, blah, blah, blah. I suspect into early January we'll get a little dip, because that nearly always happens after you've had a Santa rally. Then I think January will recover and January will be all right, and then you'll get into February, and I think that's when it gets a little bit more worrying. You get into February and certainly into March, that's when you quite often get a sell-off. And I think what will happen is we'll have a sell-off, because we nearly always do, right? And what tends to happen is the market moves before the news. And the news will be that everyone's got more upset about the delays and the time it's going to take, and the vaccine won't be going as well as they hoped, and the rollout won't be going as well. And you know, it'll be. It will be just the usual sort of stuff. But the simple reality is the market tends to move before the news comes out to explain the move. So that's what I'll be looking for, and I'll be hedging or not depending on what happens, what I see on the charts telling me. But that's my sort of like baseline scenario for how I see the next few months going forwards.
And you could be right, Pete. I think this is it. You know, we need to see what's self-evident. We get told a lot of things, and a lot of things end up being rhetoric.
After the event,
we wait for the facts and see what actually happens. Pete, before I forget, you wanted to talk about the offer from
SharePad. We mentioned it on the last podcast, but it's an offer that SharePad are running for a while, so be silly not to mention it. I think I wrote it in the I did a blog at the weekend, my stocks and markets blog, and I wrote about it in there. So if you're struggling to remember what we say on the podcast, go and look at that blog and you'll find it in there as well. Basically, SharePad are doing an offer for not for the basic version, which is the one I use. They're doing it for ShearPad Pro, which gives you level 2 pricing, live pricing, and all the usual features and all the rest of it. And that is normally £69 a month. They're doing it so you get 3 months for the price of one, so you save £138. If you want to do that, you need to go onto their website, click on the sort of button that says I want to buy it or whatever. I think it's subscribe. Yeah, I think you click on that button, and it comes up with a screen, and it's got a space for promo code, you know, promotion code. And what you do is you type Twin Pete's BF, which stands for Black Friday, because it's like a Black Friday deal. Twin Pete's BF, type that in the box, and that will get you the £138 saving, and away you go. We get a little drink for that, so thank you very much if you do that. Fantastic. I think that's it, mate, on that.
Cool. Pete, when I spoke last time, I was asked about a particular stock. Spoke about HSP then. The other one that I was asked about that on that particular occasion around that time was another one called Renalytics.
RENX, isn't it? Is that right?
RENX. And it's a developer of artificial intelligence enabled clinical in vitro diagnostic solutions for kidney disease.
I was doing a bit of that this afternoon, mate.
Well, hopefully not, mate.
That's true.
Of one of the most.
Imagine if I created a vaccine.
Chronic medical. Medical Trump's conditions worldwide, Pete. So I was asked about that. So I'm going to quickly just run through the bull and bear points that I found on that particular stock when I did it last month. So what I found, and the ticker symbol is RENX, and this is the bull points in no particular order. Yeah. Quality CEO and CFO collaborating with AZN, which is AstraZeneca, in a study to examine the use of therapeutics on patients for the chronic kidney disease, abnormalities, disease, etc. has a 25% stake in a company called Cantaro. Yeah. It's looking at an US IPO, and the ticker symbol for that will be RNLX. Was well received. Announced the commercial launch of Kidney Intel X clinical testing reports platform within Mount Sinai Health System in New York City. It's in that space that everyone likes, which is AI, biomarkers, diagnostics. So it's extremely hot space.
Yeah.
Hence, it's already got a lofty valuation. Yeah. There is a huge global market for their services and tests that they do and will provide. Yeah. They're trialing to identify COVID-19 in patients with kidney injury.
Oh, mate, COVID-19.
Yeah. Because of all the damage it does to the lungs and all the other parts of the body. Yeah. So if that's successful, it could be an absolute game changer for them and an immediate revenue driver if it happens, okay? So those are those. And also it's got a great space of people already, institutions already invested in that company, and fund managers already invested in that company. So that, those are all the bull points, okay?
Yeah.
Bear points is that it's currently loss-making. Yeah, and it's valued at 340 mil at the time that I looked at it. It might be a different market cap now.
Versus it's 289 on my phone.
Okay. So yeah. And it was a spin-off out of EKF, yeah? And EKF's valuation was less than that at the time I looked at it. So look at what that is. Cantaro is fast moving in the antibody testing space versus, and the question really about the space that they're in regarding antibody testing is how does that compete against the PCR testing that's going on? And basically, when they go into the hospitals and where they're used, it lowers the healthcare cost. So it's a win-win for the patients and win-win for the hospitals, and especially in America where people are having to pay for their own costings in the hospital. So basically what I was saying was, for me, it's a little bit overpriced at the minute, but keep an eye out regarding what happens regarding their future explorations and their future sort of testing that they do and what goes on with the company going forward. So I was neutral on the company, but it's one to definitely go and research a bit further in the sense looking of the space that they're in being a hot space.
Looking at the chart, looks pretty good chart. You know, it's sort of in a nice uptrend and it's dipped down and it looks like it might be possibly starting to turn up again. So it looks pretty good. Yeah, I guess it's the usual thing, isn't it?
March 2020,
it was to get you going, you know.
Yeah, it hit 175. Everyone got on the AI COVID train, took it to 6.45. And when I finished my research, quick research on it, it was at 468. What's the price today, Pete?
Hang on, 2 seconds, mate. I'm just getting out my superb ADVFN app. Right, 488.
Well, there you go. So it's not much since I looked at it. But yeah, it's one to definitely keep an eye on, research a bit further, and have a little think about.
Yeah.
You know? So that's it.
Mate, I've got one I'd like to ask you about, actually, if that's all right. Pick your brain out.
As long as it's not Brickability, Pete, which I know nothing about.
Oh, yeah, good old Brickability. No, I just wonder if it's one you've ever looked at, because it's one that I've sort of pondered a few times. I must admit, I haven't looked at it for about a week or so. That's MGP Medica Group, yeah? Do you know it? Have you heard of it?
I've heard about it, yeah.
It does like, you know when they do like, say, radiograms, where they, you know, they take a photo of you, like the blood going around your heart and your lungs and whatever they do, and they're like, or the lungs or something, and they these radiograms get sent off to experts, and the experts look at the radiogram and they go, oh yeah, look, that's got a cyst in it, you're in trouble, or they say, oh, you're perfectly all right, nothing to worry about. And that's sort of what they do. I mean, that's a bit simplistic. And obviously one of the risks is that as more AI comes into that space, you won't need humans to look at it, you know. So that's obviously a risk on it. But I just wonder if it's one you've ever looked at, if you had any thoughts on it, and what we think, really.
I haven't looked at it in detail, Pete. I know of them because they're in the, I can never get the pronunciation of this right, but I'll use the shortened version of it. They're in the MRI space, aren't they?
Yeah.
CT scanning of images. So I've looked at it only in the sense of other companies that were in that. And I like the computer driven AI sort of neuro imaging sort of space for it. But they're in that space, Pete, and you know the hospital needs them, and we're not going to get away from radiologists and having radiology departments just yet.
Yeah.
Are we? It's not going to be a case of we're going to be able to do all this by computing yet. So they've got a long shelf life going forward, Pete. So, and I think if I'm right, I heard mentioned they bought something recently as well.
Oh right,
company.
I'll have a look on me apps if I can spot it quick. Oh look, there's a director shareholding thing today. So it says
going back in November, Pete. They bought Global Diagnostics in Ireland.
Right.
So whether or not that boosts them and they're increasing their reach and all the rest of it. So they bought a little company, Global Diagnostics Ireland, 16 million euros, which is 14.5 million.
I've never read in that, yeah.
Yeah, so that's them using the cash or using what they've got to increase their footprint. So that's a really good move, mate, you know what I mean? And especially in Ireland, because that gives them a footprint, hopefully, or indirectly, into Europe, and that keeps them another holding in the EU. You see where that's going?
Well, yeah, that's obviously a good idea.
So depending on how they straddle both sides, they've got a footprint in the EU still, and might save them a bit of red tape. And that's a big market there they could have.
So looking at the chart on it, and I'm looking at like a 3-year chart on my phone, and really it's been in a range, sort of like drifting downwards. Well, maybe at the best you'd say it was sideways, but it's sort of drifting downwards. And it looks stuck in a range between just below a quid, the 100p, up to at the most sort of like 180, and at the moment it just looks sort of like just in that sideways range. So personally, I wouldn't really do much with it at all. I mean, if I liked it fundamentally, if I look into it more and I get excited about the fundamentals, I might buy a little bit as a starter position, and then I would wait for a breakout on the chart or something exciting to happen. Then I would buy more. But at the moment, I mean, it's an interesting stock, but. Thanks for you've sort of made my mind up that actually I'm not that excited about it now. You've talked me out of it, mate.
No, it's got plenty of time to grow, Pete, and that acquisition is gonna help them somewhat of a bit more reach as well. So I don't see that as a bad stock to be in.
Yeah.
And this goes back, Pete, to what we were saying before. You know, a lot of the companies that are in the UK All Share, FTSE All Share, and AIM All Share. Are undervalued. You know, there's still lots of companies being taken over. And I saw one coming through this morning, and I was like, I've never even looked at that stock.
What was that?
That was Nucleus Financial. Did you see that one this morning? This afternoon it got a bid offer.
Oh, NUC or something.
NUC, Pete.
Yeah, do you know what? I've looked at it and I thought it was quite an interesting company, but I didn't know how to take it. That's amazing.
Yeah,
so much stuff being taken over.
And this is what I keep saying, you know, do some research, find something that's undervalued. You know, if you've got the conviction regarding your own research, be happy that no one else is talking about this stock.
Look at that, Nucleus Financials up 39%.
39%, mate. And there's
hasn't been listed that long, a couple of years it's been listed.
But the interesting thing about this one, Pete, there's more than one entity trying to buy it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the share price has moved today without even being declared a price that the companies are going at it for.
That's fantastic.
You know, it's not come out and said, oh, they've offered £1 or they've offered this and that. It's not said anything. It's just said, oh, we've had a bid.
Wow.
And already it's gone up 39%. You know, the danger is that, you know, one of the dangers is
they come out
with the offer and the offer's lower than what the price is now. But equally, if there's more than two companies there, the price could go higher. So who knows?
Oh, so true. Mate, sort of in a similar space, but sort of different. Because Nucleus Financial, I think, does like trading platforms and stuff, you know, for like financial services things, I think. What I noticed the other day, I thought was quite interesting, Curtis Banks, CBP. You ever looked at that?
Nope. Pete, I've been anti-banks for a long time, mate.
No. It's Curtis Banks is like a wealth management company, like Mattioli Woods or something,
right,
like that.
Okay,
MTW, it's like that. And it anyway, what I thought was interesting is it I'm finding now that with the jump we had, yeah, it's not so easy to find real value in the market. I mean, I think there's still a lot of stocks that are gonna go up, but I don't look at them and think, oh yeah, that's really cheap now. It's like, yeah, that's good, but it's sort of not far off what it should be priced. But this one I thought actually looked quite cheap because it's on a historic dividend yield of about 4%. which is quite a good yield in this market even. And it's on a historic PE of 13.7. So you'll need to look into forecast and stuff and suss out what it is going forwards. But, you know, it's quite beat up and whatever, but it had quite a good update the other day. And I thought that was quite an interesting little company, that.
Yeah, I've just pulled up the charts here, Pete.
And yeah, what's writing?
So it's gone from, you know, the slide from COVID in February. It was sitting at £3.60. Yeah. It got to March lows of just 199-ish, around that sort of price. Bounced again to 280, and then it's come down again quite rapidly across the summer until it bottomed again during November. And then, like you say, the update's taken it from 195, a new 52-week low, up to 233. So if that's the start of a recovery and people acknowledging that actually their situation wasn't as bad as it was, then there's hope then, because obviously right now it's still sitting year to date down 34%.
You know, it's interesting chart again. Yeah. When I looked last few days, it could be starting a bull flag. If you read my blogs and stuff, I quite often talk about bull flags, which is sort of where a share price jumps up.
Yeah.
Then it goes sideways for quite a period. It can be like 3-4 weeks or whatever. It just sort of wiggles sideways. But that's often a precursor to another jump up. And it looks to me like that might be happening. I mean, it's early days to tell, but it you need to watch for that. If it, you know, it might happen. You never know.
Cool. Pete, we've done over an hour.
You're joking.
So oh, yeah.
Hey, we've done an hour, started. We got loads. I've got a blimmin' list here of stuff we got to talk about.
No, we've done an hour and five, mate.
What is going on?
I want to quickly say thank you to everybody that's been listening to this podcast. Some of you might have noticed, but Pete and I put a couple of tweets out, and a very tech-savvy person mentioned it to somebody else to us, that we should maybe experiment with adding the Twin Peaks to YouTube, not with our faces, because we're not, you know, we're radio friendly, we're not visually, you know,
yeah, we don't want to scare the horses.
We don't want to scare them. It's not Halloween, so all we did was added a little picture and overlaid it with the audio, and we put it on YouTube, and we've had.
Mate, tell the truth. We didn't know how to do anything.
We didn't know how to do it. Someone else did it for us. Yeah, I should add that. Sorry, someone else did it for us. We're not tech savvy, so we had some additional listens to the podcast. But the listen for 36, Twin Peaks podcast number 36, was the highest listened to podcast we've had since the summer. So I want to thank all of you, ladies and gents, that have listened to it, all of those that shared it with other people and retweeted and gave us phenomenal feedback. We just want to say thank you ever so much for doing that. And we even had a shout out from someone in Kiev saying thank you for the podcast. So
Ukraine, they love us.
That was absolutely phenomenal. Yeah, and the thing was, it was sent to my tweet in Russian, so I had to go to translate it, and then I replied in Russian. So that was quite funny.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so wherever you are, thank you ever so much for your continued support for us, and thank you for subscribing as well. We've got a few more subscribers. If you listen for the first time, you've enjoyed this, or the 10th time, whatever platform you're on, whether it's be SoundCloud, Apple, Google, Overcast, Audio Boom,
Spotify,
you know,
YouTube,
or SoundCloud.
Not on, mate? We're on everything. I mean, it's just like amazing.
We're waiting to get onto Amazon. We'll get a heads up on that at some point as well. If you're listening, just subscribe, and then you automatically get it usually ahead of everybody else as well. And you get a notification when it's there, and then you don't have to play catch up with episode 14 as Conor Ray is doing in Ireland. But we appreciate Conor Ray.
Yeah, Conor McCreevy on Twitter, he cracked me up because he says, "I've just listened to this podcast. I look at it, it's like TPI 14 or something." I'm like, "What? You're only about 20 podcasts up." So I think he's going to do some binge listening.
Absolutely, mate. This is the beauty of it. The beauty of the podcast is so that anyone can listen to it at any time they want, and invariably they'll be able to pick something up, some little nuggets from it, and hopefully utilize that to enhance what they're doing. And improve what they're doing, and that's the whole premise of what we're trying to do.
I'm hoping it'll improve me as well, mate.
And well, equally, the more we do, the more we learn, Pete. This is it.
That's so true. It really is.
And this is what we're saying, folks. You know, Pete's been doing it for 20 odd years. I've been doing it for nearer to 30 years. But Pete and I are still learning. We're still making mistakes.
always learning. So, it's just never ending.
What, the minute you stop learning, the minute you stop growing, people. So just carry on learning and don't take it for granted that someone on Twitter that's saying loads and loads and loads and loads and says it eloquently knows what they're talking about. Do your own research and come to your own decision. And if even better, start your journal. If you haven't got a journal, start a journal. Start a diary. Write down the reasons why you're liking or buying this stock.
Well, start a blog, you know. I say I use Weebly.com, which I find brilliant. And I've never paid them a cent. It's free, which is why I'm always happy to talk about them. They've done me a lot of favours over the years. You know, start your own blog. Just do a very simple blog and write down the reasons why you bought stocks, because people will find it interesting to read themselves. Yeah, other people will find it interesting, but it's really good for you because it gives you like a sort of journal, like a diary you can go back to. They're online. You can see it anytime. Simple.
Absolutely.
Mate, I'm underselling myself because I keep saying, like, you know, I've been doing shares for 20 years or whatever, which is true. Actually, a bit longer, probably more like 22. But what I'm missing out is that before I started doing anything with shares was I worked for like a lot of years. But I also did a business studies degree. I also did business studies A level. I've also been fascinated by economics like all my life. So, you know, I've been steeped in the whole sort of industry, business, economics thing all the way through. I'll just say I got a first because it's not very often I get a chance to brag about that.
Pete, that's awesome, mate.
Let me just throw in my
academic experience here. I left school at 15, folks. So if I can do it... And I can read 1,000 books. You can too. And it's about putting a 1,000 hours in. Once you've done that 10,000 hours or 1,000 hours, you can become better at it. You know what I mean? I think I went to uni when I was 29, Pete. I went very late.
Yeah, see, that was funny you said that, because I went to uni when I was 27. So we both went really late. So we both realised that the real world was pretty painful and we needed to get educated.
Absolutely. Education. Once you get educated, folks, people can never take that away from you. That's, you know,
true.
And this is the beauty of learning. Once you've got it and you grasped it, no one can take it away from you. No matter where you are or what you're doing, that education will be able to help
you. And you keep building on it. You keep adding to it. And that's the whole thing with the stocks, isn't it? It's like, you know, you're always learning. Every day you are learning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we talked about luck, Pete, and some people came back to us and say, yeah, all I've had is bad luck.
<You know>? I've had that.
We've all had bad luck. And this is the beauty of the markets. You know, the fundamental situation with investing is that it's an area of uncertainty, and you have to be ready for that. You know, and I keep saying to people, take the brilliant November that you had with good grace, because we don't know what December holds or what 2021 holds, and just be balanced about it. Yeah. And then doing so, you won't get as stressed, you won't get as anxious, and you'll be able to deal with what the market throws at you.
And a lot of it is having a plan. So it's like with me, you know, I said earlier, my central scenario, I love all that because they go on about it with Boris and those flipping awful press conferences. They go on about their central scenarios. So my central scenario is that I think the markets will rise in December. But the thing is, I'm positioning for that. But if I'm wrong, I've got a way out of it quickly because I can just slam some hedges on and that gives me protection very quickly. So I've got a way of dealing with it. I can adapt fast. And it's so important to have like a plan. It's like, yeah, I've got a plan that I think the market's going up, but what do I do if it goes wrong? You've always got to think, what do I do if it goes wrong? You've always got to think that any stock you buy, what do I do if it goes wrong?
Absolutely. Because you've got to be careful that you're not sitting there in a biased position where you're like, I'm going to stand strong. I'm staying here. I'm not moving. I'm not budging. I will stand steadfast. And the market will knock you on the chin.
You've got to
be prepared. You've got to adapt to what the market's doing, because the markets will make a fool of you, me, Pete, and everybody else every single day of the
and
week.
And they love it. The market making a fool of you more than anything.
Absolutely. And you know what? The market owes you nothing, and it'll keep taking from you if you're wrong.
Oh man, I'll tell you what, it owes me a lot. Anyway, let's not go.
You've done all right, Pete. You've done all right over the years, mate. You've done exceptionally well.
I'll tell you what, it's been such a... I can't believe this year, because, you know, it's been nuts. It's been a crazy year, and yet there's a lot of us actually sort of done all right, really. And you sort of, how is that possible? None of it makes any sense, I'll tell you.
Pete, it's not over yet. We've got another couple of weeks yet, and I'm sure there's going to be some people pulling their hair out, some people celebrating. But you know what, folks? We've come through it, And as I say to everybody else at this time of our podcast, be thankful, have some gratitude, you know, look at the positives that we've got in our lives.
We're so lucky. Like,
we are very lucky. Lots of people, including myself, have lost loved ones, you know. And, you know, people talking about COVID this and COVID that. People have lost loved ones, folks. You know, and I've not
seen they've lost their jobs. They've lost they can't feed their families. I mean, the misery out there is just off the scale. Absolutely. I heard say that they reckon in the last 10 days, you know those, like, what are they called? The excluded? The sort of 3 million excluded people. Out of those people, 8 of them have committed suicide in the last 10 days. And it's just like, the misery people are going through is off the scale. And here we are moaning because this stock went down a little bit. You know, it's like, we got to get a bit of perspective. And we are so lucky. I would say probably most of our listeners, certainly me and you, you know, okay, we're fed up with it, but my God, we've had it so much better than so many people.
We have. It goes back to the mindfulness for me and the kindness. You know, there's been, you know, good, bad and indifferent behaviour on Twitter. And I would hope that some of our listeners that are listening to this particular podcast and the ones in the past, Pete and I always talk about kindness. We talk about, you know, supporting this charity that we've been supporting. You know, we're trying to engender a positive vibe for people, because there's enough negativity out there. And if you're able to, in the next couple of weeks and during Christmas, show a bit of love and kindness to somebody else on Twitter, in your community, a charity, supporting a local shop, do that, please. Just look out for each other, because, you know, we're all better supporting each other than being isolated. Okay, so just show some love and some kindness to people.
Definitely. Right, mate, we ought to finish fairly soon. We've been talking a couple of minutes.
Yeah, I think we've stopped this.
We're just getting started. I've got all these topics, mate, we haven't covered. I want to talk about how little money I've spent this year.
No, we'll talk about that another time. We're 76 minutes in, folks. So Pete and I are going to say goodbye for now.
Au revoir.
And we'll say goodbye, take care, God bless, and we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Hopefully you'll be lucky and the markets will be very, very kind to you going forward. But we'll speak to you in 2 weeks. Pete?
See you later. Cheers.
All right. Take care, folks. Take care. God bless. Signing off. Bye-bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.